Hello, everybody, and welcome to a, I guess, very special episode of Kotaku Split Screen, the podcast where we tackle video games one excruciatingly specific topic at a time. I am, for now, one of your hosts, Kotaku senior reporter Nathan Grayson, and I'm joined by, for now, another one of your hosts, Ashley Parrish.
Hey, everybody.
And for all time, your other host, Michael Fahey.
Hi, I guess I don't get to go anywhere, but we'll get to that in a moment.
Yeah, so to dispense with the vagueness, this is a special episode because the podcast is going to go away for a little bit after this one. The short version is that
we're going
I'm leaving
away.
Kotaku, and Ash is also leaving Kotaku, and while I have no doubt that Fahey would host an incredible one-man show, it's not really a popular podcasting format, I don't think. So,
if I were Ira anyway, Glass, it would be popular.
That's true. But then you have like a whole production team behind you. Like it's a different thing that I'm not sure GeoMedia has equipped us well to handle.
I'll just do that.
Okay, you can do all of the various aspects of it, not just like being on the show, but also editing and adding sound effects. And
what?
Yeah.
We still have a producer.
Hey, if you ever wanted to know what an entire podcast of the Imaginarium would sound like, now might be your chance.
Yeah, that would really be something.
God, I should try it. I should try it next week. And just, we'll say today's the last episode, and then we'll do like a very special podcast episode next week where it's just me talking in a silly voice and pretending I have friends.
Yeah, you can talk in all of your silly voices, and you can sing. I mean, you can do all of your kind of like customary Fahey things.
Really?
Yeah.
You didn't catch that pretend I have friends? Isn't that great? Everyone let out a heartbroken sigh if you're listening, as Fahey says.
I'll do that now, because I'm pretty heartbroken about it.
Anyway, so you continue. I'll just sit here. You continue on, Nathan.
But yeah, so I think that today we are going to, have a, I'm not sure if it's going to be a truncated episode necessarily, but today's topic is, fittingly, goodbyes, or farewells, or sayonaras, or whatever you want to call them.
Auf Wiedersehens.
Auf Wiedersehens.
And good
I've never And good nights. We got to pluralize all of it. Otherwise, it doesn't fit.
No.
Wait, are we going to sing? Are we going to sing The Sound of Music? Do it.
I was figuring we could do a stirring rendition of My Way by Frank Sinatra at the end.
We're talking about
all this, of us singing out of key and out of sync with each other.
I was thinking more of the Von Trapps, where farewell, goodbye, later, see you dudes. I don't know the song very well.
Yeah, no, that sounds right.
You don't want to do Closing Time?
Oh man.
God, no, semi-sonic. Yeah.
I know who I want to take me home. I actually don't.
I don't know. Weirdly. It's still undecided.
It's kind of very strange.
I have several choices on who I'd like to take me home.
Narrowing down by weighing their merits.
Roll some dice. That's gaming.
And they're how human they are.
Human. I guess that would be the case for you, Ash, given that they're probably all BioWare protagonists.
Yeah.
But anyway,
video game goodbyes.
Yes.
Everybody.
So for our first actual segment today, although I think in a twist on the entire format today, we're only probably doing two real main segments, unless you count that first bit where we just talked about leaving.
That's a segment. I'm counting it. I'm totally counting it.
Okay. Cool. Cool. All right. So for our second segment of the day, I guess. Sorry to just really undersell all of you guys in terms of content. We're going to talk about the best goodbyes in video games because, obviously, number one best video game goodbye is me and Ash leaving the podcast. It's top all time, beats out every other game.
I don't know.
We're not saying goodbye to video games. We'll still be around, just not here. So you can't fucking get rid of me that easy. God damn it.
No, you can't get rid of me that easily.
Actually, we can. I personally can, because here we are, GeoMedia, and you guys are fucking right the fuck off. So I can get rid of you that easily, but for the rest of everyone, they'll be floating around. You might be hearing my keyboard click right now because I'm trying to look at something on the internet while we're recording.
Hey, I just thought you were tapping keys to tap on them.
Yeah, one thing real quick that people might not know about or might know about from my Twitter account is I have a broken hospital bed. I spend most of my time in a hospital bed because I'm paralyzed. This bed's been broken for a month now, and they've been promising to replace it and not. So when I type, I cannot see my keyboard since I can't sit up. So I'm playing by feel here. So every time I go to type, like, hello, I have to find the H and then start over. And now I'm typing things. I'm trying to type goodbye into my search thing for a reason. And all this typing is me trying to type one simple word. Anyway, hi.
It's sort of like it's a representation of the fact that you're having trouble saying goodbye.
Hmm.
Exactly. I think that's, as soon as you guys leave, they're going to replace my bed. So get the fuck out.
All right. So, best video game of goodbyes.
Weird that we're holding off talking about this for as long as possible, as though not talking about it will make it all seem not real. And we can all stay together a little bit longer.
That's nice. No,
wait. That's the key. We keep this episode going for the rest of our lives.
Michaela, our producer, probably just had like a heart attack.
She has to do is depending on what her goals are here, either outlive us or not outlive us.
Or Sopranos us and just cut us off mid-sentence.
Oh, yeah.
She has that power.
Michaela, who is our producer in Zoom chat, just typed, oh God. Yeah, just so y'all know.
No, but, before we talk about... I'm not doing this on purpose, but it's kind of like representative of how you don't want to finish a video game because it's actually so good, so you stop playing it so you don't have to say goodbye to it.
Topic pivot really fast.
Oh, no.
What are some games that y'all have done that with?
A lot of them.
I'm going to go ahead and say every game I did not finish. It was my way of saying... I don't want to stop playing, so I'm just going to stop playing. Yeah, we'll do that. I will say that after Final Fantasy IX ended with... what's the song that ends it? La, 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 la.
I think that's not Garnet's theme. I want to say it's Garnet's theme, but it's not. La, 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 la. It's not Rose of May, which is the better song.
In my something memories. God darn it. It's great that I screwed up the memories line. Can't remember that memories line. Are you looking it up now?
Oh, Princess Garnet's Memories.
That's the song. The song at the end, I cried like a frigging baby through that whole thing. And for a few years after playing that game, when I get to the ending credits, I just kind of turn the game off. Because I didn't want to have to go through that again. Because I sat there in bed with Final Fantasy IX and that shitty player's guide that referred you to the internet that didn't work.
Oh, yeah, that was an amazing guide.
Oh, and I sat there and cried all over that goddamn strategy guide. And after that, it was like, I can't just say goodbye to these games. We're going to just end them. Final Fantasy X. I never got to the very end of Final Fantasy X because of that very same reason. I was like, we're approaching the end.
I'm done. Then Suzanne kicks on? Yeah.
And I'm like, nope.
That'll get you every time.
Nope. And that's why I'm going to peace out on the podcast right in the middle of it. You guys will be like, so Mike, what do you think of Mike? Mike, where are you? Oh, Mike pissed off. Okay.
What about you, Nathan?
Let's see. What are some that I can think of? I feel like I did this especially a lot. Like, the reasons I don't finish games now often just come down to, like, practical and time-based concerns. But when I was a kid, like, I pretty deliberately ended up not finishing Zelda The Wind Waker for, like, a year or year and a half. Like, I reached the point where it was kind of definitely in the final stages of the game, and I was like, well, I'm going to put this down for a while and let it last forever. I think I did the same thing with the first Kingdom Hearts. I feel like that was another one where I just put it down for like 6 months. I was like, I don't want it to be over, and it feels like it's about to be over. Let's see. Are there any that I've done that with recently? I sort of took that approach with The Witcher, The Witcher 3, though I also had other reasons for doing that, mainly because I got upset about a choice I made and I wanted to go back and change it, but I didn't want to spend 15 hours playing back through the game from the save point that was most relevant to what I had done.
Was it the Baron?
No, it wasn't the Baron. It was a romance option.
Oh.
One of the stupider reasons that I could have done that, but nonetheless.
Apropos of nothing, real quick, I like the way when we talk about how we, whenever we talk about The Witcher these days, everyone just basically means...
The Baron.
It means The Witcher 3.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, because no one's talking about The Witcher 2 or Witcher 1 anymore.
It's or that Witcher AR game.
Oh,
I mean, we might be talking about it. It comes out this week. Who knows? Maybe it's incredible.
Yeah, next week on Split Screen.
Yeah. But no, I was just going to say the Witcher 2 is underrated. It's a really good game still. People should revisit that if they have not played it before. But yeah, I think those are the main ones I can think of that I kind of left on hold for a while.
I know most recently I have not finished Chicory, which is a game that I will not stop talking about because it's so freaking good. But I stopped playing it because I didn't want it to be over. And I have a feeling I'm very close to the end. And I don't want to play because I don't want it to be over. And I am not prepared for whatever emotional damage is going to do to me because that game is very emotionally damaging, but like in a you need to hurt to kind of heal kind of way. So, yeah, I don't need more emotional distress at this particular point in time. So I'm just going to put that to the side. I thought about it the other day, like going back to it. Cause I'm like, I want to play a game, but I don't know what I want to do. And I just thought about it. And I'm like, you know what? No, I'm still not going to do it. But to echo Fahey talking about Final Fantasy earlier, I think Final Fantasy 15 was a game that I got very close to the end and just stopped because, oh boy, that is one of those games that is really like it starts off really good and then it gets better when the world opens up and then it sinks all the way down when it gets to its on rails portion. But then when you get back to the end, like the very, very end, it's like one of the best experiences that I've ever had in a video game. And not to get ahead of the topics, but if I was going to pick a video game that had a good goodbye, that would be one of them.
Well, maybe now's the time to transition into that topic.
Yeah, let's go. Let's
Yeah.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
All right. So, anyway, continue talking about why that has a good goodbye.
So, the goodbye in Final Fantasy 15 is not blanket spoilers. I'm pretty sure, just to issue a blanket spoiler warning for pretty much every game that we're going to talk about from here on out, we're going to spoil the ending. So, you've been
or at least a component of it. Maybe not the whole thing.
Yeah. I'm going to spoil the whole ending. But,
oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, the ending of Final Fantasy 15 and the goodbye of Final Fantasy 15 are like two different things. It's because there's the ending that happens at the end of the game, roll credits, beat the final boss. But then there's the goodbye portion of the game that's right before the, you know, final dungeon or whatever. That is such this arresting display of like friendship and, you know, just saying goodbye to the bros that you've been hanging out with on this like epic 30-year long road trip. I don't know if it's 30 years. I think it's actually like 10 or whatever. So
I just wanted to actually say really quickly, you know, this podcast has been a real epic 30-year long road trip for me. Mm-hmm. That's how it feels.
We have been recording, I think, 39, 40 episodes?
Years? Yeah. Something like that.
Yeah. So
a lot of those episodes, we had to get out and push the car.
Yep. Oh, well, Stand By Me,
so we kind of cut
plays?
Them from the
road. Oh, my God. Yeah. Yeah. So at the end of Final Fantasy 15, like your party is separated and you're separated for like X number of years and you come back and the world is destroyed and you're back and you're like, okay, I'm going to fix all this. We're going to set everything right. And before you go into the final dungeon, there's like this last moment where you talk to your three companions and, you know, you kind of catch up with them and like what they've been doing in these past years. And, you know, they all tell you one way or another, they're really proud of you. And you get to say like these personal messages to them, you know, while the main theme is playing in the background or whatever, like, you know, goodbye, you were this great person. You were, you know, this prince that I could look up to. And then you all, you know, don your armor and go fight the final boss and, you know, it ends. But that moment before the end where you say goodbye to all your characters, like I've got like tears flowing down my face because it's just so well done. Because, you know, it's like, it's that, you know, goodbye before like the final battle. Like, we don't know if we'll see each other again. And we probably won't. So let's just say all the things about how we mean everything to each other right now while we still have the chance. And that, I've only seen that done maybe one other time in a video game very well, and it was Mass Effect 3. I love that moment, and I love everything about it. It gave the player space to say goodbye themselves in addition to saying goodbye to the character, and it's a beautiful moment. To say nothing of the game's actual ending, which maybe I'll get to later.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you also touched on something interesting there, which is that I think on one hand, like, evoking emotions through a goodbye is not that difficult of a thing to do because it's such an intrinsically like human thing to feel emotions about. But on the other hand, I feel like not that many games have really nailed it, like in terms of making a goodbye land impactfully and making you feel like, oh man, you know, this is it. This is the culmination of everything. These characters who I like a lot are not necessarily going to see each other again. And, you know, that feels rough. Like, because it's interesting. I think about the number of times that that games have made me feel something about a moment like that versus like TV shows, for example. I feel like TV shows are really good at tugging on your heartstrings via that. Like, I think that an example of a thing that I left on hold for a long time and finally finished earlier this week, in fact, to really just like make everything line up in a way where like my life and pieces of media I consume are sort of in conjunction with one another, is I finally finished Schitt's Creek this week, the TV show. I had been waiting for 2 years, I guess, year and a half. And I finished that and then watched the little mini documentary they made about like the making of the show and specifically the making of the final season. And I was just crying my eyes out the entire time. I was like, I wasn't expecting to feel so many things. But yeah, like games, I don't feel like they manage to stick the landing quite that well all the time, in part because I think games just have trouble with endings in general. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that was just kind of my long-winded spiel about that. Fahey, what is a good ending? Or what is a good goodbye?
And that, we're not talking about endings now, because you guys are both not ending, as well, far knows? As you know.
Yeah.
I mean, dark. Goodbyes? Yeah, well, that's what you get. Well, goodbyes are kind of tough in video games because there's the end of the game. I mean, that's a big goodbye, but that's not even necessarily framed as a goodbye. That's like a happily ever after. When most goodbyes in video games that I remember, or memorable goodbyes, if you want, are characters dying. And as far as I know, you guys aren't dying.
Yeah, but at the same time, I think that counts. I don't think we need to strictly talk about, like, the moment at the end of a game where people say goodbye to each other. I think that, you know, while grim, a death is a valid...
goodbye.
A valid see you later.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, my personal favorite death will say, and it's weird that you guys are leaving and we're talking about goodbyes, but I'm all like about death. What is that about?
You want to kill us.
We're dead to you now.
I'm not saying that. You guys said it for me. No, I think one of the most bittersweet goodbyes would be Biz Markie.
That's topical.
Yeah, he's not in a video game, but
he's not. He's not in like Def Jam Fight for New York or something like that.
Oh, he was a little out of shape by the time Def Jam Fight for New York came out. I know Biz Markie from Yo Gabba Gabba. My kids watched, and he'd be on there for Biz's Beat of the Day. And he'd come on and teach kids how to beatbox. And I have like a little, I'm looking at my computer right now, and I have this NZXT CPU cooler that plays animated GIFs. And I've got Biz right now on there. And I just thought I'd point that out. And we're talking about goodbyes. I want to say goodbye to Biz Marquee. But to switch gears to video games, one of my favorite video game goodbyes has a line associated with it. And I will read it and see if you guys can discern which character is dying. The line is, "Ah, you cursed squirrel." Okay, first we have cursed squirrel. Mm-hmm. "Look what you've done. I'm flushing. I'm flushing. Oh, what a world. What a world. Who'd have thought a good little squirrel like you could have destroyed my beautiful clagginess? I'm going, ah, no."
This is Conker's Bad Fur Day, right?
This is Conker's Bad Fur Day.
Okay.
Wow. That was impressive.
That is the great mighty Pooh, who is flushed by the squirrel.
Ew.
After a beautiful musical number, he's the, of course, the giant piece of shit with teeth that are corn.
Oh.
What? Yep.
That was a real thing.
That's burned into my brain. I'm sorry, Amy.
I'm glad I do not have like a visual memory for that, because I don't want that burned into my brain.
Unfortunately, I remember looking at that in like screenshots and magazines and stuff when I was a kid. So it's burnt. It's very well burned into my brain. It's a formative childhood memory.
Let's get in a few more Fahey's really old before you guys leave. I think that's great.
Oh yeah, we should. Let's see what things did we that. Quick bonus segment. Fahey's really old. What things did we not get to experience that we hear about, like from a historical standpoint, that Fahey was just like around for? Like
Ultima Online.
25-cent Cokes.
Oh, yeah. Actually, I mean, I indirectly experienced Ultima Online. I'm the youngest here, so I can say that. My cousin played it when I was a kid. That made me want to like play MMOs, because I was like, that looks neat.
I'm imagining a small child with your exact head. Facial hair and all, just like a tiny, just giant eyes.
Yeah, I have a weird syndrome. It's kind of like, it's tangentially related to Benjamin Button syndrome. It's body age, head not age, but born fully formed syndrome. It's so rare that they didn't really try it very hard when they named it. But anyway, let's see other things that we didn't experience in real time that Fahey definitely did.
Console boom of the 80s.
Yeah, I was going to say multiple console generations. Oh, the like death of video games.
Yeah. No, you weren't there for the death of video games. That was great.
Yeah.
It was awesome. Hey, kids, I had an adapter for my ColecoVision that played Atari games.
Interesting.
You also played Pong, which is the only game that ever exists in one of our pocket dimensions.
We had Pong. We had a home Pong system from, I think it was Sears, up in my grandma's attic. We had that, and then we borrowed someone's Odyssey too. So, yeah, we were savvy back in the day.
And let's see, Fahey, what's the first like presidential administration you remember?
Carter. I remember Carter.
It's fascinating.
Yeah, I don't remember. Was it Ford before Carter?
Sure.
I
don't know.
I don't remember much of Ford. Was I alive for? Hey, this is brought to you by. Let me see if this works. Alexa, when was President Ford president?
Gerald Ford was president of the United States between August 9th, 1974, and January 20th, 1977.
Okay, so I remember a little bit of Ford, and I remember he used to be made fun of on Saturday Night Live back in the day, the earliest episodes. So
now, by contrast, Nathan and I, what's the president that you have memories of? The earliest president that you can remember?
I mean, I don't remember, like I was definitely alive for the Clinton administration, but like I think in my child brain, Bill Clinton was just some other celebrity. Like, I didn't really grasp the importance of the office of the president, at least in the present. I mean, like, I learned about presidents in history and stuff, but these ideas just felt divorced because you had, you know, goofy fucking Bill Clinton playing saxophone on TV. Okay, that's not entirely true. I remember when he got impeached.
I do,
because my parents talked a lot about it. My parents are, unfortunately, pretty Republican, so it was down in good old Texas, it was a whole thing. Everyone was like, yeah, impeach him. He's the worst moral stain on America in all of history. forget about the Trail of Tears. Bill Clinton had an affair.
That is Bill Clinton and the whole Monica Lewinsky thing and all of the jokes that I kind of got, but kind of didn't get, and nobody would explain it to me. That is what I remember. That is like my earliest presidential memories. That and all like the dumb, goofy Saturday Night Live skits. I take that back.
Uh-oh.
Does anybody remember all that?
Yes.
All that. We.
I mean, I remember. How could you forget all that?
We.
I mean, all that had like a weird like thing where they would have Amanda Bynes cosplay as Ross Perot. And it was funny as hell. But like, you could put that in front of like, you know, my 10-year-old nephew and it would be funny to him, but he would have no idea who the hell Ross Perot is. But I know who Ross Perot is, who was not a president, but I know he was like a president, like, candidate.
He was the first presidential candidate I ever voted for.
Oh boy.
There we go. Yeah. Another Fahey first. By the way, retroactively, I'm naming the segment Fahey's first. But
okay, great. Awesome. Yeah, no, Ross Perot, I voted for him because he was goofy as shit. And that's what you do when you're 18 and you can vote suddenly.
You did it. It was the meme candidate.
Yeah, he was
before there were memes.
Before there were memes, he was the meme candidate.
Yeah. So I remember that is also the length and breadth and depth of Ashley's like early political leanings. I laughed at Ross Perot's skits on all that and Saturday Night Live skits of the president, Bill Clinton.
My other earliest like memory of a president that is, I think, more related to this podcast is that my like main specific memory of George Bush's administration, George W. Bush, is that when somebody threw a shoe at him, somebody made a meme of like it being a quick time event. Where like an A button popped up and somebody pressed it and he dodged the shoe. And that was like, yeah. But anyway.
What are we talking about? Goodbyes?
Yeah, wait. So that's the end of that segment within a segment. Okay. Now we're back to the main segment, which was video game goodbyes. So, right. Let's see. The best one, in my opinion, I mean, there are a few that I really like, but I think that the best one all around is probably just The Witcher 3's Blood and Wine expansion. It's like a 30-hour goodbye. And it's like a hyper-generous expansion in terms of just all the different quests and things you get to do. But I mean, it's ultimately, compared to like the main game, Witcher 3, and even the first DLC, pretty low stakes. And it's just kind of like Geralt getting to have, finally, after a lifetime of, you know, strife and conflict and memory loss and all this other stuff, just getting to have a nice time. He gets a vineyard. He gets to be in a place that's like a perpetual vacation, and quests kind of like call back to things that happened in other Witcher games. And you get to say farewell to all these different characters. And it's just really nice. And I think that it is the way that it is because at the time, at least, CD Projekt also knew or thought that they were saying goodbye to maybe the entire Witcher series. And at the very least to Geralt as a main character. And over the course of like creating the games and establishing their entire identity on those games, they had come to really love him. And so they wanted to, you know, they wanted to give him a send-off that felt like something that was earned. And I think they did a great job of it. And I think going back to like some, kind of my digression earlier about games not always managing to stick the landing on goodbyes, I think part of it is that you've got to earn those moments. Mm-hmm. And like, because games are often so lackluster in the story department or so not really focused on telling stories compared to other mediums, it's hard to earn those big goodbye moments because a lot of characters don't get fleshed out and developed, or, you know, their motivations are never fully clear beyond just like kill a bunch of dudes or what have you. And so it's hard to have like an ending where it tugs your heartstrings just right, because there's not that much to work with. It's just kind of like, okay, we did the video game, now let's get out of here.
Sometimes it'll take multiple games before you feel enough for a character. Yeah. I mean, I was just remembering Gears of War. I want to say 3 or 4. I think it was 3. The one where
Gears of War 10-2, I think.
10-2, where they did the dress up. Oh man, those characters when he's a dancer, it's just beautiful.
Yeah, no, I really like that they added a job system to Gears of War 10-2. I feel like that was kind of like from the moment that I played the first Gears of War, I was like, it's good, but it's missing a job system.
But who was the character who had to drive? He had to drive a tanker or something into a thing to blow it up.
You're talking about Dom.
It is Dom. Yeah, I mean, if they had done that in game one, wouldn't have mattered whatsoever. It took three games of big, meaty, shooty guy games before it was time for Dom to die and mean something. And boy, I never thought I'd be sad about the passing of a Gears of War character.
Mm. Well, yeah, because that game has a surprisingly amount of heart for, you know, Gears of War. And the whole thing with Dom is that, like, his wife is missing and he's been looking for her and he finally finds her.
Maria.
Yeah, and she's like...
Doesn't she crumble into dust or whatever?
Yeah, because she's been, like, taken hostage by the Brood or whatever, and it's been, like, used up, like, a battery in the Matrix or whatever. So I think this is the second game, or the third. I don't know if it happens in the second or the third game where he finds her and kills her, but by the third game, it's like, okay, you know, Dom is this, like, this whole thing up until this point was trying to find his wife, and now she's gone, and now, you know, they need something to happen and he's the only one who could do it. And then, like, his final moments are like, goodbye Maria, like, I'll see you soon, and then boom, and it's like, okay, yeah,
it's like, what works. A way to go, Maria, or how do you think I go out like this? And it's like, no, but they're gonna be together.
Yeah,
that was a good moment.
Yeah, but I mean, that is one advantage games have in some cases, at least, is that games are often so long they can span, you know, multiple entries. And so you reach a point where you have this attachment to characters simply based on the fact that they've been around for a while. That said, a contrast to that is that two of my, like, favorite video game goodbyes are from shorter games. I think that maybe one of the best, at least in terms of just, like, you know, making you feel all sorts of things, is Undertale.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
The end of Undertale, at least the good ending, the bad one less so. Although I suppose the bad ending is a form of goodbye and that you killed everyone. But the good ending is very much like, you know, you reunited a lot of characters, you helped them get over their various, like, both physical and emotional trials, and everyone kind of, you know, moves to a new place together, and, like, you get to see a montage of people living their lives, and it's just very, it's very nice. It just feels like it's in lockstep with the kind of story that the game was telling. Like, yeah. That, you know, it's ultimately, it was about a lot of characters being separated, in part due to, like, various challenges they were having in terms of coming to grips with who they were and accepting themselves. And they do, and they're able to support each other and have a nice little life. And you love to see it.
This is all reminding me of the endings to the last two BioWare games that anybody cared about, which was Mass Effect 3 and Dragon Age Inquisition. And both of those games had DLC codas to them that allowed
Citadel
you to...
And, what's the other one?
A Trespasser.
Yeah.
That wrapped up like people's storylines and allowed you to say goodbye before you could, you know, jump back into the main game and finish the mission or whatever. And, you know, it was a BioWare game is usually all about its characters and your interactions with those characters. And so, yeah, for both things, there were, like, missions tacked on that you had to do and, you know, quests and things to shoot up or stab up in Dragon Age's case. But more centrally focused, kind of like what Nathan was talking about with the Blood and Wine expansion, was just hanging out with your pals. Like, the entire conceit of Citadel is, yes, there's a weird Shepard clone, but we also have this, like, really cool, like, penthouse in the Citadel. We're all going to sit here and hang out and watch movies and shit before the end of the world. And within that little narrative structure, you can, like, say goodbye to characters who have passed on because they have this memorial wall, or you can, like, go on a date with your romance option, and, you know, all of these, like, little vignettes that you can do that's just, like, such that encapsulate each of those characters and they're, like, iconic ways, while also, you know, recognizing, like, this is the way that we say goodbye. And in Dragon Age's case, like, they go, like, even a step further, because, you know, they operate purely on wish fulfillment, in that you can, like, marry a couple of your love interests based on who they are. Like, you can marry Dorian and you can marry Cullen, which I did more than once. You know, and at the end of that game, it was also a very nice ending to, like, your character as the Inquisitor, like, that story gets wrapped up, and it, while also setting up the next story for Dragon Age 4 whenever that happens. And it's just, and then at the end they also have, like, different codas for these characters depending on the choices that you make. Like, if you don't romance Cullen and you make him do another thing, like, he'll either be this, like, cool dude that's, like, hanging out with his dog, or, like, some strung out like drug addict that's like dying in the streets, which is actually kind of tragic.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah. Yeah. Like certain people like disappear and they're never seen from again. Or if they like hooked up, like you can see them off together, like Dorian and the Iron Bull. If you don't romance either of them, they hook up and they like have this like clandestine romance that's actually pretty sweet and shit like that. So it's just like a real, they both, BioWare was in their bag when they did that shit. And because I guess they thought the same thing was that, you know, we weren't going to make these games anymore, or at least with these characters. So time to say goodbye and send them off nicely.
Mm-hmm.
I can't believe this is the last fucking podcast with you two. And we're talking about fucking Colin again.
Hey, you know, if nothing else, I am consistent.
Yes, very.
That's okay. I wanted to bring back another character we've talked about before, in terms of saying goodbye. I think, you don't have to actually say goodbye to say goodbye. It can be just like the way the game sends off a character. And Lyrium from Lost Odyssey. That whole funeral.
Fucking A.
That whole fucking funeral sequence where you have to light the candles and send her off. And my God, talk about a character I didn't know much about that suddenly died. And suddenly I'm like, okay. It was bad enough she died. It was bad that she died, but now I'm giving her the send off, and I feel such mixed emotions, and it was so weird saying goodbye to her. And
yeah, you just reminded me of one of the worst video game goodbyes of all time. If we're talking about funerals, press X to play or press F to pay respects.
Oh no, Kevin Spacey's son. Oh no.
Yeah. I feel like that's an especially low watermark.
I mean, it was a very nicely rendered funeral. It looked great. Kevin Spacey was there.
Well, I mean, that's not a good thing anymore.
Oh no! But back then, Kevin Spacey being at your funeral was a plus, I guess. Unless you were a younger actor.
No, sorry.
Wow.
What?
I mean, it wouldn't be an episode of this iteration of Split Screen if there wasn't at least one off-color Fahey joke.
That's not a joke. I'm quoting facts. Yay. Anyway. Yay,
indeed.
You know what the weird thing about Lost Odyssey was the fact that it was that it was the young Kaim and Sarah saying goodbye to their mother who was older than them because the game's all screwy.
Time and immortal people.
Immortal people. Why can't she really guys be immortal?
Children and her parents burying her at the same time. That's fucked up.
Mm-hmm. I hope that happens with me.
I mean, I guess.
Then again, my parents.
All right, let's move on.
My parents are okay. My mom's almost 80, so I guess maybe I should not hope that. Moving on.
You know what?
What's our next segment?
I'm hoping that we all live forever. That's kind of my general plan. I approach life that way.
That's what's going to happen, probably.
I don't know about y'all, but black women live like turtles anyway, so I'm guaranteed to outlive both of you.
And you know what they say, fahies don't crack.
All right. but okay, wait, before we move on to the next segment, I think the ultimate goodbye game, and again, I've talked about this game on the podcast before, but If I impart one lesson to everyone here in my time on this show, it is a simple one. And it's Buy Pyre by Supergiant Games. Pyre is a game of goodbyes. That's the entire point of the game, is that you gather together a band of people, and then one by one, on subsequent kind of like run-throughs of the game's basic structure, where you play all of these, like, you know, you play Wizard NBA Jam, you have to say goodbye to them, and you've got to pick which one you're going to send off each time. And it's a painstaking process every time, because you come to love each and every one of these characters and their relationships with you and each other. And then you have to decide which one it's best to send back, who has made the most progress in their personal and emotional journey, who makes the most sense to send back to start a revolution, all of these things. And the thing is, no matter how far along they are in their emotional journey, no matter how useful they are to you, either where they are when they're traveling with you or how useful they will be in starting a revolution, they're never fully ready. No one's ever fully ready. You aren't, they aren't. But at some point, you just got to make a decision. And, you know, I think that of any game to ever represent the idea of saying goodbye, it does it the best, because it does it not only narratively, but also systemically. And, you know, imparts the, I think, very real truth that you're never ready. But sometimes you just got to go.
That's very sad.
Speaking of got to go, got to go to the next and final segment.
No, we don't. We don't have to. We never have to. In fact, I could, one thing I want to mention before we transfer this next segment. The irony is that originally this episode was going to be about wholesome games before all these departures suddenly popped up. And I was talking to some people about possibly, we were looking for maybe someone to interview, and the Spiritfarer folks reached out to me.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, and that game is about goodbyes.
It's about goodbyes. And I was like, wow, it doesn't really fit our episode.
Full circle. Oh. But now it does.
So shout out to Spiritfarer. About ushering people on from,
and shout out to the guy who suggested that we do the wholesome things because we inadvertently taught him what an honor hole was and ruined his day. Yeah. Shout out to you, sir. Man.
Yeah, we get some interesting emails.
There would have been an episode dedicated to you, sir, but unfortunately, these two fuckers had to leave. Next segment.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
All right, we are back for our final segment of our, at least in this configuration, final episode, which is weird to think about because I don't process emotions well. So I, you know, some part of my brain thinks that we're just going to come back and do this again next week. And I've not really fully grasped the idea that this is it. But anyway, for our last segment, we're going to talk about our time at Kotaku and doing split screen and stuff like that. I have some questions for the group. So to begin, you know, something light, fluffy, easy. Ash, how do you think you've changed during your time at Kotaku?
Oh, shit. that's not light or fluffy. Fuck you, Nathan.
Wow.
Shit, how have I changed? I don't think I'll be able to evaluate that until I am far enough away from the experience to be able to look back and say, oh, okay, I was that way before and now I am not that way. And that is how I have changed. It's kind of hard to, like, see yourself in the moment and see how you've changed. Mm-hmm. I guess, you know, me now versus me back in May of 2020, so a little bit over a year ago. How have I changed? I don't know.
You shaved your head.
It's kind of hard. I did shave my head. I cut off my hair. The good thing about Kotaku is that it has always allowed me to, you know, write the kind of way that I want to write. So I wouldn't say that has changed. I wouldn't say that Kotaku has enabled me to, you know, do that, because I've always done that and I will always continue to do that. And I'm glad I have a receptive place that will allow me to do that. So that's good. I think the ways that I've changed are more mechanical about how I write, because I've always been a very emotional writer. And I've never really thought too hard about, like, the actual mechanical process of writing and, you know, having an editor, you know, excoriate your drafts. You know, you kind of pick up a few things that I hope that I will take forward so I can, you know, be less of a burden on my new editors and stuff like that. So, but like I said, the real, like, change, I don't think I'll be able to see until I've been able to, you know, I've gone a distance and can look back and see.
Mm. Yeah, that makes sense. I think that I have the benefit of a larger pool of hindsight with which to work, because I've been here for almost 7 years. But yeah, I mean, for me, like, I think in 7 years' time, you just, you know, naturally change a lot. But I think that in terms of my approach to, you know, writing about video games and everything like that, it's kind of a night and day difference. Like when I first showed up at the site, I think Stephen wanted me to be more of a reporter than I was at the time. Mm-hmm. Stephen being our former EIC, for those who don't follow along with Kotaku lore.
Lore.
But he had hired me because like I was at a convention called DICE in Las Vegas 1 year, and there was like a red carpet for their award show. And, you know, usually red carpets lend themselves to fluffy, dumb questions. And I was like, well, you only get one chance to talk to a lot of these people because they're all like big names in the industry. So I'm going to ask them just whatever the hardest thing I can think of is. And Steven noticed that I was, you know, shoving a microphone in a lot of people's face and making them relatively uncomfortable. And true to Steven's form, he was like, I want that. I want that guy to work for us. And so, yeah, he you know, hired me on like a trial basis not long after. And then a million things happened in rapid succession. One of them being Gamergate.
What?
And so, yeah, I mean, like that kind of caused a cascade of changes to happen, both in terms of my like own ability to enjoy what I was doing for a while. I think it took me like 2 or 3 years to fully come back from just all of the various traumas that that entailed. And then also in terms of like what I felt like was important to do with my own writing and my own voice. When I showed up at Kotaku, I think that I was still very into that whole mode of writing that was like very personal, or like trying to find some way that games have profoundly impacted you on a regular basis, like that each game had to be some sort of like transformative moment in my life. And then I sort of, you know, I was like, well, this is pretty indulgent and I'm not sure who it serves, at least when like a white guy is doing it. And so I switched over, I pretty hard pivoted into like being more of a reporter and like, you know, trying to contact people and put together stories and facilitate the telling of other people's stories, which I'm really glad about in the long run. I'm not glad that Gamergate happened. I think that was an awful, horrible thing that profoundly changed games for the worse. But I do think that for me personally, it's a much better use of my time and energy and skills to be facilitating the telling of other people's stories as opposed to my own, because I don't know. I think that we live in a time where plenty of people are willing to tell their own stories constantly on a daily basis via social media. And, you know, some people need aid in getting theirs out there because there's a lot of noise and not a lot of signal. So I think that that's maybe the main change that has occurred for me.
Hey, how have you changed?
Yeah.
Well, when I started with Kotaku, I could walk.
This is definitely a fact.
That's pretty much it, yeah. Now, the weird thing is, when I started with Kotaku, there wasn't an interview. I started under Brian Crescente. And Brian Crescente had recruited me, as well as some other names in the gaming industry, to his own little, he had an offshoot blog, his own little personal blog called Red Ass Baboon, where I wrote some video game stuff along with Jessica Chobot of IGN.
And eventually, verified air.
Yeah,
interesting.
She went.
Wait, you mean Mass Effect character?
Jessica Chobot. I was about to say that. PSP licker, Jessica Chobot. In fact, it was Kotaku that initially posted that picture of Jessica Chobot licking the PSP that led to everything that happened to Jessica Chobot.
Well, that's kind of fucked up.
Yeah.
So claim to fame, I guess. I don't know. But he had me working in his basically, it was almost like a farm system. I was off to the side. I think I'd won a Kotaku contest about... I wrote about gaming in the bathroom. There was a best comment contest, and I won that from Kotaku. That got me on his radar. Once I was on his radar, I did some stuff with Google search, the Google SEO terms, ironically, using his name on my own website. So one of the top searches for Brian Crescente for a little bit was Brian Crescente killed and ate a hooker.
I'm sorry, what?
Yeah, it was a bad... I just wanted to get his attention. And the whole story was this is the power of SEO.
And how
I went through this whole thing. So that kind of got me on his radar too. And eventually they had some openings at Kotaku. They went to Expand November 2016. And I think Crescente had me. I had to write 10 blogs on my own website as sort of a test in like one day.
Oh,
man.
When we first started, it was 12 stories a day.
Jesus.
And we were paid per story at that point. So it was like, I think it started off as $10 a story and then $12 a story. So we had a whole lot of content on Kotaku back in the early days.
$12 a story, and then you could go down to the corner store and buy a bag of candy for a nickel.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the way.
Yeah, this is very much like in my day, both ways in the snow, uphill.
What has changed over the years? I mean, it's hard to say. This has been 15 years of my life. I'm not sure I remember before Kotaku what I was like. I appreciate video games more, I guess, than I did back in the day, though I appreciated them quite a lot. I look at things differently. It's 15 years. It's really hard to say what has changed because I guess I've gotten more confident in my writing.
Mm-hmm.
When I hand someone a draft now, I don't apologize as much. When I handed a draft to the editor, I think yesterday I handed it a draft and said, I'm sorry, I'm a mess. But that was just after I learned that Ash was leaving and I could barely breathe because I was, I spent a good hour yesterday not being able to breathe through my nose because I was crying the whole time. Wow.
Hey.
This is helping.
Yeah, wow.
I think I've learned to work together better with people. There was a time before Kotaku. There was a lot of betrayal in my life and a lot of mistrust. A lot of my early relationships ended in people leaving me for my friends. So I didn't really trust people with secrets or just day-to-day crap. So, mm-hmm. And I've learned to trust and respect my coworkers. And in a way, it's like, I still don't really have. I'm sorry.
No, you're fine.
I still don't really do the whole real life friends thing. So I know I overshare a lot with you guys in Slack, but it's because you guys are the people I trust and the people I want to talk to when shit happens. So to have two of you leaving in such close succession is really tough. And I'm going to shut up now. You guys talk about something for a second.
No, I mean, that's incredibly nice, Fahey. And yeah.
Oh, fuck.
I am sincerely sorry that things worked out this way. Because yeah. It does feel like a kind of a gut punch. And that's not
a second harder gut punch.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, the funny thing is yesterday Patricia said, well, I mean, I know it's really hard, but on the plus side, split screen's now your baby if you want it. And I'm like, oh, great. Great. Nothing like turning me into a single kid. Fucking parent and going, hey, good news. You're a single parent now. Like, wait a minute. My whole support system is going away. Yeah, have fun with it. I have no idea where this is going to go. And maybe I'll do a special episode next week where I just talk about thoughts on where we could go from here. But maybe we're going to go into a hiatus after this for a bit while we get everything together. Kotaku needs some fresh faces to replace these stale old fucking faces that are going.
It's true. Everyone does tell me I have a stale face.
It is stale.
I can definitely take advantage of face off.
Yeah, when you bite into it, it's just really, it's got that, there's no crisp to it.
No, no.
It's just fleshy and sloppy. Just,
yeah, the bone, kind of flaky yeah, too.
It's like
biting into an old croissant.
Exactly. So we need some fresh, crispy faces here. But what the fuck was I talking about before all that happened? We were talking about how Kotaku changed me. Yeah, I mean, there's that. It's we talk a lot about coworkers, but this site's been a lot like a family to me. And I mean, I've got my own family, and they're being nicely quiet in the background somewhere right now. But
good for them.
But my extended world, especially since becoming paralyzed, I sit in a bed most of my days, and the people I see on a regular basis are you guys. So, so moves like this profoundly affect me. And I know you guys are going to be on Twitter. And,
we're both working in video games still. Mm-hmm. So,
well, I know. And we'll get to bitch about you in private Slack. Like, oh,
and
look,
you can have us on to bitch into our faces, you know.
Hey, yeah, no, we can even be guests.
Oh, yeah. Guests? Like bringing back old split screen hosts as guests? Yeah, like all those times we got Maddie and Jason and Kirk to come back? Wow.
Yeah, to be fair, I don't think they would be game for it.
No.
I'm not sure. I would not want to, you know.
Well, they have their own show to run.
Yeah. So, I would be game for it. I would come back.
I would, too.
That's okay. But starting next week, Kotaku single screen, where it's just...
No.
Kotaku screen.
It's just a podcast of me playing video games. All you hear is buttons and video game bloop noises, and occasionally just
it's like a stream but without visuals.
Exactly. Except Kotaku no screen.
No screen.
You know,
unplugged.
I listen to it.
Oh boy.
It's kind of. I mean, that it's just like button ASMR at that point.
Is that nope? Don't answer that question.
Of course it is. Come on now. But anyway, okay. So an additional question, something lighter, for real this time. What is the best email or DM or message that you received from somebody while on the job?
Hey, you go first while I think about it.
I have a good one if you both need time to think.
You go ahead. You start.
All right. So a very strange thing happened to me back in 2016 or 2017, somewhere thereabouts. Basically, I ended up writing our story on the announcement of a Five Nights at Freddy's movie. And because we were pretty quick with it, I think that we ended up being the top search results. And, you know, I think our story went really far, especially on Facebook. And so a byproduct of this that I was not expecting is that I started to receive emails from people who were likely pretty young, because Five Nights at Freddy's had a pretty young fan base. And so people who, you know, seemed to me to probably be young teenagers. And they were all asking for me specifically for details on the film that they seemed to believe I was making. Because, and I've done a lot of thinking about this, because this kept happening for a year and a half.
Oh my God.
On a monthly basis, at least, I'd receive a new email from some kid being like, hey, can I be in your movie? And so part of me thinks it was a concerted trolling effort, but it just lasted too long and it seemed too sincere. So I don't think it was that. I do think that it was legitimately well-meaning kids who don't understand how things work, believing that because I wrote a post about this, it must be mine. And I think they thought this because they're kids in the modern era of the internet, where a lot of news, at least in terms of announcements, comes straight from the source, where instead of from, you know, websites and blogs and stuff. And so they just assumed that Kotaku was not a news website, but rather some sort of film production company. And yeah, so it was so bizarre. I got so many of these emails.
So is this why there's a casting couch behind you on your video screen here?
Yeah, that's it. I'm finally, that's why I'm leaving Kotaku. I'm going to go make my dream movie, finally, of Five Nights at Freddy's, a game that I've never played, and that already was turned sort of into a film featuring
Nicolas Cage.
Nick Cage.
Nicolas Cage.
Which wasn't bad.
Starring now starring in Pig, Nicolas Cage.
Which apparently also isn't bad.
I know. It's weird. No, I will say, I do not agree that it was not a bad movie. I think there was a lot of inconsistencies in that movie, but it wasn't not entertaining, I will say. In the, what was it called? Nicolas Cage. Pig? No, the other one. The Nicolas Cage fights the...
The Five Nights at Freddy's? I don't remember.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
Anyway. Ash, what's your favorite IM that you've gotten in the past?
What's your favorite AOL instant message you've received while working at Kotaku?
God. I don't have one that I can point to hold up as the be all end all. This is the best thing a reader has ever sent to me or whatever. I can tell you what the worst is, but I won't do that.
Oh, no.
I will often get like messages on like Twitter or whatever that say, thank you for writing about this. And it's usually after I write about something where Black is involved in any kind of way, like Black people or like some kind of Black thing that Black people are doing Blackly in video games. I'm saying Black as many, as often as I can, just to piss off people that get pissed off whenever I say Black anything. And it'll be people that are like, you know, thanks for writing about this. I didn't know about this. Or thanks for shining a light on this. I've never seen anything like this before. And it makes me feel good to see this. And that makes me feel good because there are times when I do Blackly write about Black people that people get upset, like, well, why are you talking about Black people? You know, you're racist for pointing out this person's race or whatever. You're the real racist. It happens a lot, more often than you think. And sometimes the inevitable thing that happens is like you get so many of these racists or in a racist vein comments that you start to think, well, shit, did I do something wrong here? Like, I know what I did was not, you know, talking about this person's race in the context of whatever it is they're doing is important to me, because for me personally, you know, it's not, we don't talk about it enough. Like, you just, the Black people that exist in this space just do not get that kind of airtime. And it's always been my, you know, job or whatever to, you know, find those people and talk about them and bring them to light and show them and say like, hey, you know, we're here, whatever. I think it's weird that we're still having to, you know, find these people and show them like this, but it's important that they be seen. And, you know, people sometimes take exception to that and they think it's like sowing division or whatever, but, you know, they don't realize that not everything has to be about or centered to you, who may not be a Black person. And, you know, for maybe consider for other Black people that seeing, you know, an older Black woman who just won 2 Guinness World Records for her collection of video games, it's important to talk about the fact that she is a she and that she is Black, because we don't have these kinds of like video game elders, you know, that we just don't have those examples, and it's nice to see them. So I'll get these messages from these people that I'll say like, thank you. Like, thank you so much for writing about this. And it reminds me that, yes, I am not crazy. You know, that I have done a good thing here, and I have exposed these people who needed to see these kinds of examples, and getting those messages, those are the best ones.
Hell yeah.
Oh, I mean, for me, all the best messages, I will say there are no specific ones. But after my incident in 2018, yeah, I know, Mike, milking the paralyzation thing for all it's worth. After I, in 2018, for those of you who don't know, in early March or mid-March, I had an aortic dissection. My heart split open, basically. And there were complications due to years and years of smoking, which, don't fucking smoke, people. Seriously, it's a bad idea. It does horrible things to your body. Normally, if you do survive an aortic dissection, which you don't, a lot of people don't. Most people don't. You recover within days, but due to the complications, they couldn't get me to breathe again. And that was all complications from smoking and all those years. So I spent several weeks, maybe 3 weeks, under heavy sedation and paralytics to keep me from trying to pull out my stuff. I was out of it for 3 weeks. I was pretty much unconscious and dreaming. And there's a story about that on Kotaku you should look up. And then for the next, for another month after that, I couldn't even look at the internet. I mean, literally, when you wake up after several weeks of being unconscious, your skin grows. But it doesn't, you know, your skin's always growing. But it doesn't, you generally moving your hands around, it flakes off. And it keeps it smooth like it was. I had grown thick pads over my fingers. So as I learned how to move my fingers again, because I was on paralytics, I couldn't quite touch things. I couldn't grab my phone right. They had to get me a special remote for the TV so I could hit the buttons. So I spent another month not being able to really do much of anything. And when I finally did reconnect with the internet, so many positive messages, so many well-wishers, so many, you know, notes from people who appreciated what I've done over the years. And day to day, you don't hear that. I write a lot of stories that, I mean, I know you guys get a lot of negative feedback when you write a story that's controversial, and I get that as well, but they never tell you that, hey, this was a cool story and this made me happy. And getting those was great. Also, the fact that a friend of my wife's put up a GoFundMe that ended up raising like $26,000. So the people who read my stuff basically carried my entire family. I was in the hospital from March until July 3rd, and I couldn't come back to work, really. I didn't come back to work till August. And they carried my entire family the whole time. I mean, shout out to my brother Richard, who is a split screen listener and emails me every Friday morning to tell me about the episode he just listened to. He would bring me Snapples, and he was there. He, of all my siblings, he was the most supportive the whole time. But really, the way everyone rallied around me for that that moment was beautiful, and I will never forget that as long as I live. My family was taken care of. I could relax and recover, and I'm here now because of all that. I mean, if I had woken up and gone, oh crap, I've got no support. I'm only getting, you know, disability or medical leave payments. We would have been completely screwed. So I owe a lot to everyone who's read my stuff and supported me over the years. And so, wow, this is all full of feels. How are we going to drive this episode home without everyone just kind of crashing? How are we going to do that?
What is it? Like, was it Don't Stop Believing? We have to cue that in.
We were talking about My Way by Frank Sinatra, and then Closing Time.
Mm.
And let's see, what were the other? I think those are the main two songs. Yeah, I mean, we just got to. We got to sing them all in unison now.
Yeah, because next week's when I just do the one episode of me singing Bye Bye Miss American Pie quietly.
Mm. Yeah, and then you can do the sequel to that song, which is Bye 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 by NSYNC.
Sure, that's the sequel.
Nope, it's canon now.
Yeah, it's canon.
No,
it's
then real. And then Backstreet's Back is the follow-up.
Is this the
requel? The trilogy. Yeah. Bye Bye Miss America, Bye Bye Bye, and then Backstreet's Back.
Yeah, no, the thing that won't be revealed until like posthumous biographies is that Backstreet Boys were actually in sync from the future, like coming back to save the past.
Holy shit.
And so, yeah, that's all.
Where does 98 Degrees fit in?
98 Degrees is a band first and foremost about the ravages of climate change.
I was going to say, they live in the climate change timeline.
Yeah, yeah.
And they fit neatly inside of the members of NSYNC.
They do. And that's where most of them are to this day. Except for, what's his name? Nick whatever? Nick Lachey. He just does a poor job of hosting reality TV shows now.
Oh.
Yeah.
And we brought it full circle right back to Backstreet really Boys have. Where we started.
Yep. Backstreet is truly back.
All right. Okay, we sang.
We did the sing together. You have been listening to Kotaku Split Screen Podcast. You can reach us via email at splitscreen@kotaku.com and on Twitter at Uncle Fahey. That's Fahey. At VAHN16. That's me. Or at Astra, which is Ash. My producer is Michaela Heck, and our sound engineer is Ryan Allen. It's been an honor, everybody. See you around.
See you next time.
You've been listening to Backstreet's Back by the Backstreet Boys. Just do that.
FT, Kotaku Split Screen.
Rock your body, yeah. Everybody, yeah. Rock your body.